This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
At least they know the chemo doesn't work now. You know, don't worry, there's new treatments coming through all the time. I'm like, hang on, I thought we got rid of it.
Yeah.
And she paused and waited for me to cry. And I'm so obliging. And then I thought, oh, she wants me to cry, I better cry. Hello and welcome to You, Me and the Big C with Lauren Lolly Mahn, aka Girl vs. Cancer. Got Deborah James here, better known to some as Bowel Babe, and me, Rachel Bland from Big C Little Me, also heard on Net 5 Live from time to time. We are three friends, we're also bloggers, and we all have one thing in common. We all have or have had cancer. And we want to tell you about the highs as well as the lows. You can get in touch to suggest future topics and things you'd like to hear us talk about by using the hashtag YouMeBigC on all forms of social media. And today it's a biggie, this pod. We're going to talk about the one everybody fears, the chemo.
Ooh,
the big bad chemo. We're going to get onto it in just a sec. But before that, we've had a busy couple of weeks, haven't we?
Very busy, between the
three of us.
Very busy.
Deborah, you get the Hero of the Week award for making it here. Just tell us what's been going on for the last 10 days.
I had an ablation a week ago, which was a lung ablation.
What's a lung ablation, Deb?
A lung ablation. Well, essentially, I had lots of hot rods stuck in me.
Lovely. Sounds painful.
That's quite sexy.
My surgeon will say that it was really technical. I'm not, you know, I'm sure it is really technical. I was under there for five hours.
Were you knocked out?
I was knocked out. Oh. I was under general anaesthetic. I'm sure it's incredibly technical, but essentially somebody's sticking a hot poker in you and burning the tumours out. But they got out three tumours.
Round of applause for the tumours.
And my lung collapsed as well.
Oh, okay,
that's not so good.
Which wasn't as fun. Which is expected. That's like a regular side effect.
I love a standard lung collapse.
So I woke
move
up.
Move on, everyone.
Move on. So I woke up from general anaesthetic and I was like, they said, oh, we've got our three tumours. And I was like, yay, but your lungs collapsed. And I was like, I'll take it.
Yeah, I take that.
Don't worry about it. I'll take it. So I was in a little bit longer than I thought. My clever lung kind of got back together eventually.
And this as well, it was all very cold as well. So it's not quite the weather to be
It wasn't too bad because normally I hate hospitals, but the Marsden, I'm, you know, learning to love.
Yeah.
You know, as much
home
as,
from home.
Home from home, as much as you don't want a hospital to be your second home.
Well, you're looking really well. So you recovered, but you've got to do it all again in a few
Yeah, this is the problem. So they got out three tumours. I've still got a few more tumours left. Well, hopefully actually just one, but you never know.
Yeah.
You never know with this cancer thing. And so I've got to do it all again in 10 days' time. No rest for the wicked.
No rest for the wicked. But you're made of tough stuff, girl.
Yeah.
Come on, I can do it.
We're keeping you working really hard.
In between, we'll record a couple of podcasts.
Yeah.
We'll be fine.
Why not? What else would you do?
Yeah.
Lols, you mentioned before you were going to be having this new drug.
Yes.
Might be putting you into a chemical menopause.
Yeah, man.
How's it been?
So, yeah, touch wood. All right so far, but it's only month one, and I've heard as of month two, that's when things are going to start to get really interesting.
Suddenly ramps up.
So the injection itself, I was terrified of because I'm a bit funny with needles, and it's a big boy. It's a big boy. Yeah. It's not. It's like a borehole of a thing. So I refuse to look. But yeah, they give you this Elmer, I think it's called cream, and it numbs.
Emla
cream.
Elmer.
Cuddle
Elmer the elephant.
I'm blaming the chemo, Brad. I blame it for everything. I had that, and I actually didn't feel a thing. I'm like so happy because I was terrified. Like, it's so weird because I haven't been scared of going in for a procedure since chemo times, really, and my operation, which was in May. So, but yeah, it's happened. It's in. So I'm awaiting the hot flushes and stuff. I've been a bit prickly. I've been feeling a bit irritable.
We have to be careful,
yeah.
Rach.
Yeah, we're going to have to use a safe word.
Or we could just wander up.
Yeah, see what happens. Use it as like an experiment.
Bring it.
Get red around the face then, Oz.
So yeah, calm down. But yeah, it's in, but nothing to report as of yet.
Yeah, so this is a drug called Zoladex.
This is Zoladex, yeah.
And so I've been having that to kind of shut down my ovaries in the hope of preserving them through chemo, but you're having it as actually part of your treatment because you're...
My cancer's hormonal, yes. Yeah. It's a preventative thing. So my cancer fed off of hormones, so they're not... If there's any little cancer cells running around my body making a home for itself, they're not going to give it any food, basically. So, yeah, that's that. So that's happening now. And it's my last real big bit of treatment now, so I'm in it. So I'm just waiting for the side effects to kick in.
So I have had a fun week or so of results.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
Love those results appointments. Results appointments for me never go well. I hate. I never walk in and the surgeon or the oncologist is like, so great news, it's all worked. So I had had a lymph node clearance on the opposite side to my primary cancer a few weeks back. Went back to get the results. My surgeon was away. How very dare he? Every time I see him, how dare he take a holiday? So it was a stand-in. I waited 2 hours to see this stand-in who said all the wrong things. So they got out 19 nodes from that side. Your lymph nodes are like these little sort of beans, kind of, you know, in a little chain.
They drain, don't they?
Yeah. And so it was in 7 of the 19, which is quite a lot. I think that is 3 the magic number? Am I right in thinking
something that? Something like that. But I only had 3 removed. But if they'd have found more, they would have taken. If they'd have found it, but mine didn't have any.
I think it depends where, because it's different for bowel cancer.
So I think the ones under your arm with breast cancer, if you've got it in fewer than 3, that's better than having it in more. Obviously. Less is better. Less is
but 7 of 19, you know, bad. It could be 19.
Well, this is what my surgeon said, who I went back to see this week and put a whole different perspective on it. And this is something we must come to in later podcasts, is, you know, the different experiences of different medics and finding the person that speaks to you in the right way. So the lady on the week before was very, very nice, and she was trying to say things to make me feel better, but actually was making me feel a lot worse. She started to talk, at least they know the chemo doesn't work now. You know, don't worry. There's new treatments coming through all the time. I'm like, hang on, I thought we got rid of it.
Yeah.
let's not wish it back just yet.
Yeah.
And she paused and waited for me to cry. And I'm so obliging that I was all right. She said, were you expecting this news? You know, you seem all right. And then I thought, oh, she wants me to cry. I better cry. So then as soon as I started crying, then I couldn't stop. I had a good old sob for the evening. But then the next day I pulled my socks up, felt a bit better. And by the time I saw my surgeon this week, he was kind of like, well, we've got it out, you know, it is what it is, it's out now. I've not been recommended any more treatment for now, but
perfect.
I went straight from seeing my surgeon for a CT scan, so it's pending.
Okay, so now we're pending.
When's results day for the CT?
Yeah, probably next week sometime. Okay. So, you know, anything, as we all say, anything could be going on.
You just don't know. I've had a cough cold and I'm convinced it's in my lungs because I've been coughing.
Yeah, and I'm convinced my pain is liver now.
Yeah, well, there we go.
We're
all riddled.
Chest pain, lungs. So,
chest pain, lungs.
There we go.
Yeah,
we're all going down. So the chemo, you know, I just finished that chemo. I had my last one on 12th of January. That was my second lot. We've all had it, and it's the bit of cancer, I think, that it's the bit of the treatment that terrifies everybody. How did you guys feel when you were told? Because not everybody who has cancer treatment needs chemo.
Yeah.
But when you're told, you've got to have the chemo.
So I immediately assumed, and I think we can all agree with this, I immediately assumed that I was going to lose my hair. And that's actually the first thought. I was thinking, I can get through the sickness, I can get through the tiredness, I'm not quite sure about the hair. And it scared me. I was scared. I was really scared. You don't know what chemo involves until you are sat there in that chair. But before I got to that point, and I know Rachel is in the same situation as me, and you had a slightly different one, Lolly, didn't you? I actually had to undergo, I became a robot. So in order to get the chemo into your system, you actually, there's lots of different methods, but myself and you, Rachel, we share it. Well, we don't share a port.
That would
be a bit awkward.
Hard work.
A bit hard work. But I was implanted with a port.
Yeah. And so a port is, I tried to do an Instagram stories on this to explain to people. And I think even after I'd explained it all, people were still like, what is it?
I ended up just flashing my boob half the time to show people.
Yeah, so it's a portacath, which is, it's just a way of them getting into your veins. Where's mine? Yeah, so mine as well. There it is. So
I
it's like
it's
a little.
Side.
Yeah, it's like a little. I think it was. It depends.
Hang on, it's under the skin.
Yeah, did you not know that?
Can you see?
Yeah, so it's like a little kind of pod thing they put under the skin in your chest.
Do they put a needle in that then?
No, they have to make a little incision.
And that's attached to our central vein.
Yeah. And so there's a little tube that comes off it and into a vein in your neck.
If you feel it, it's all bubbly.
Yeah. And can you see there? There's like a little tube that goes up into my neck. And there it goes into a central vein. And it saves them having to stab you in the hand. Although I didn't have mine until about the last 2 or 3 cycles of chemo. So, you know, they used my veins, ruined them.
Yeah. Also, the good thing about it is if you're on a long regime of chemo, it means that you can bath and swim.
Yeah.
And it, 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 well, it's just part of you. And it makes you exempt from going through the scanners. Or I use it as an excuse anyway, because I just say, I'm going
to
beep.
At the airport, because I went through one the other day. And as I got through to the other side, I thought, was I meant to do that?
They're perfectly safe to go through. They just beep. So I just go, what's the point of going through?
Yeah.
So then you get like special treatment. Wave me through this line.
Yeah, because I had a pick line fitted. So it's a little bit, it's different to that, obviously. But again, it runs up the central lines. But this one goes in the arm. So I call mine Pete the Pick.
It's like a little tube, isn't it?
Yeah, and it just dangles out of your arm. It's really weird. It's on my Instagram. When I got it fitted, and I'm really, I said, bad with needles. So getting that fitted, I had to have lorazepam and be a bit like, woo, for it, because I was terrified. But it really did save my veins, because I had mine fitted, I think it was chemo 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And my veins, like by chemo 2, I couldn't extend my arm.
Yeah, they go hard, don't they?
They harden. People don't realise. So what happens is, guys, is the friction of the drugs, because they're quite severe drugs, is they cause friction in the vein, which causes them to harden, and it causes them to tighten, and it can be quite painful. And is it called phlebotomy?
Phlebitis.
Yeah,
it's like an irritation of the vein.
Yeah.
See, I had phlebitis that then turned into cellulitis, which is an infection of the soft tissue.
Yeah.
And you don't want cellulitis. One of the most painful things I've ever had. My arm swelled up; it was enormous, and I just had to like hold it up. If anybody came near me within about a meter radius, I was like, "Stay away from me!"
It's quite dangerous, because then that can go into your system.
I definitely. I don't know about you guys, but if I had to go through the chemo process again, I'd get a pick line fitted before I even began. Because it just takes a lot of the drama out.
Because I asked about a port, because someone had mentioned it to me before I started my chemo, and they said to me, what are you asking about that for? And I said, someone just said, I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And they said, you don't need it to start with. And then it was by, you know, about the 14th or 15th.
Yeah, they
chemo,
see how you go. Not everyone needs them. I know a lot of women who, in breast cancer anyway, who have had like the 4 or 6 who actually don't need it. I think mine, because I had to have 8, the fact it was killing my arm by chemo 3, it was like, we have to do this because...
Yeah,
it's
I actually threw my toys out the pram. I was like, I'm not having it. I just come out of one operation. I was like, I'm not having another operation. Just give me the needles. I'm so grateful I've got it.
Yeah.
I actually quite like it.
How is it feared then, the port, guys? Because for me, I was awake. It's like a local anaesthetic. It's threaded up because it goes straight in the vein. You don't feel it.
Yeah.
So it's done over like 20 minutes. And it's actually a really quick, easy procedure. And not what I thought. What about the port fitting? What's that?
You were knocked out.
I was knocked out.
Very jealous.
Thankfully.
I wasn't.
Mine was an hour under general anaesthetic. I think it's quite straightforward. With a collapsed lung and a degree in surgery. I think it's quite a straightforward procedure. Yeah. I think it can be done either under general anaesthetic.
Yeah. I had to have the local. And because I think they tried to do it for me one day, my bloods were too low. So I'd had to go back. And there wasn't time. I'd asked for sedation. I was like, I'll take a bit of sedation. Mm. Why not? And there wasn't time to have the sedation. So I just had to have the local anaesthetic in that area. It was wide awake, all covered up in the
sheets. Gosh.
And it was just, was aware of what was going on. And I don't like to be aware of what's going on.
No. Knock me out.
It's never a good thing. But now it's in. And actually, for the 2 weeks after it went in, because they said to me, within a day or two, it should settle down, it'll be fine. Mine wasn't. Mine was agony. I'm not sure whether I had a slight infection in it. It was agony for about 2 weeks where I couldn't sleep on that side. It's right by where my bra strap should be in my chest. So it kind of rubs on it. But now it's fine. It's all settled down. And it's just a lot easier to use. That's about getting the chemo in. How did you guys find the experience of actually having the chemo? Let's talk about rocking up for chemo on the first day.
I was terrified. Mm-hmm. I remember crying my eyes out the night before, going, I don't want to do this. Because for me, cancer didn't scare me. The chemo did.
Yeah.
And because chemo is what makes you sick, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know about you, but I was a very woman.
I felt fine. Made me sick with all the...
Told me I had cancer, I was walking around for like weeks. But I feel so well, but I've got something in me trying to kill me. What's going on? The chemo, I think it's a universal thing. I don't think there's anyone out there who's going to be chill about this. The first chemo is terrifying because it's completely unknown.
Yeah, you don't know you're going. It's the fear of the unknown, isn't it?
It is, and you don't know. And it's so weird, actually, because we'll probably come on to this in a bit, how routine it becomes.
Yeah.
And it just becomes normal and you become a bit flippant and blasé about the whole thing.
Is that my person? Is that this?
And I'm like,
Put that in.
Oh, I skip the rage if someone was in my chair. That's my chair.
Yeah, I the rage. Favourite chair as well.
It was like a good omen, isn't it, almost? But the first day of chemo for me was turning up, and I came mob-handed. It was my brother, my sister, and my dad. I think because everyone just felt like they needed to do something and they didn't know what. And I was so afraid. And I think it's just that initial bit of it actually going into your body, because you don't know how you're going to react, and you're scared of reaction. You're scared if it's going to hurt. There's all these things you don't know until you're in the chair. And it doesn't hurt to go in. You don't feel it. It just is going in. And the weirdest part for me was the cold cap.
Yeah,
because that's the bit you feel. You're cold and you're shivery, and your head's a bit sore for a few minutes. So that was a real scary thing. I'm really bad with needles, so getting the cannula into my hand was not fun. I ended up having to go in my arm, because the lovely lady who did it for me initially was training, and yeah, she had to do it three times. It was not the best.
Oh, it's never a happy moment when you get a trainee, when you're like, yeah, okay then.
I just remember looking at her thinking, why today, why now? But to be honest with you, by the time I got to chemo three, I decided to start having lorazepam, because it just took the edge off the panic.
So what is that? That's like a mild sedative.
It's a mild sedative. So it's part of the...
It's a special belief.
Yeah, like diazepam family, but it's not as like, woo. Yeah.
So you're just going in a little bit stoned.
You're going in a little bit.
A little relaxed.
Apparently, I would break into song in the chemo chair.
I would break into song.
But I think a big part for me, what makes it better is the people. And you do kind of form friendships in the ward. I don't know about you guys, but you get to see the same faces, and also the staff.
Yeah, absolutely.
The staff, which is, funnily enough.
Yeah, funny you should talk about the staff on your chemo ward, Lauren, because we've got one of your chemo nurses with us today, Kate Lewis. Hiya, Kate.
Hi.
Hey, Kate.
Hi, Lauren.
I feel like it's a bit like This Is Your Life when we're reuniting you. Do you remember Kate Lewis?
I still see Kate in the hospital when I go in for my Zoladex and stuff. So it's been nice. I've had Kate do a couple of my Herceptins, haven't you, love?
Yeah.
Kate is one of my fave nurses. I probably shouldn't say that. But you are.
Don't tell anyone else.
And Kate did my last ever chemo, actually. Yeah.
Emotional.
Yeah, so thanks for coming on, Kate.
Yeah, no problem.
How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Bit weird. It's a bit of a different experience being here. Should be on the ward giving some treatment.
I know. They'll be like,
we've snatched you away from the patients for the afternoon.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Because obviously for you, it's probably... we talk about it from a patient perspective, but from you as a staff perspective, people who are administering these drugs and seeing humans go through this real scary life-changing moment, I mean, how do you manage that? I guess, like, I don't know what it must be like through your eyes to see someone go through it.
It's incredible. You have so many different patients of so many different ages, of different types of cancer, at so many different stages in their life, and you have to be the sort of front person for all of that when they're upset, when you're happy, when you're angry, when you just want to take it out on someone. And it is every day, and it's hard, and you do get worn out. But at the end of the day, we're there for the patients. If there's any problems they have, they can always come and talk to us. And I hope that's how we come across to everyone.
Oh, yeah.
It's stressful for you at the end of the day rather than us. It's our job that we've chosen to do this, and we love our jobs. So it's making the patient feel as much at ease as you can, and just to have the not the best experience, but the best sort of journey through the whole cancer experience.
I'm always amazed at how unflappable you guys are. Yeah. So I'm also treated at the Marsden, Kate, and Jenna's always the nurse for me, who seems to be able to calm me down when I'm hyperventilating in a corner, bawling my eyes out, saying I can't do this. And I find it incredible that, having done that for 20 cycles in a row and I'm still bawling my eyes out, she has an incredible ability, or any of the team do, just to be unflappable in situations. You know, you press the red button and 20 people come with the red button, the crash button. That's happened to me a few times.
Should we explain what the red button is? So basically, Kate, you have talked me through this about 1,000 times, because I was convinced on my second drug doctor's attack that I was going to react. And actually, Kate, I think you treated me the day that two women next to me in the chair both reacted.
Yeah, I think you had a pretty wild experience that day. It's something that is, when you're going through it, is and you're in a chair next to someone who's having a reaction, it's very daunting, and you think, oh God, that's going to be me in a minute. Mm. Or if you haven't started your treatment and you see someone react, and you say, oh gosh, what are they having? And it's what you're about to have.
Yeah.
And you just go into a blind panic. But we're like little meerkats. We hear the emergency bell and we go running, and it's so controlled that it's sort of dealt with as soon as possible, and amazing. Nothing.
Kate, are you able to explain just for the listeners like what a reaction is and what we're talking about, and
so
basically how often
fear,
it is?
It?
Yeah, it's everyone's great fear, but also be interesting to understand how often that does happen and how quickly it is to fix. Because I didn't react, luckily, but I know a lot of people have, and actually it is dealt with so far. So it'd be great to hear from a medical perspective.
Yeah, so a reaction basically is we're putting a foreign substance into your body, and your body is sort of going, what's it this? And sort of starts to react to it and think, I don't particularly want this in my body. So your immediate reaction is to get really flushed in the face. You might have back pain or sort of chest pain. I think the way to describe it is that the patient thinks, oh, this doesn't feel quite right. We normally sit with the patients and we can see instantly if there's sort of reaction come in. You can see sort of redness in the face. Some people say that it's like an impending doom, which is a little bit worrying. But with us, we've got emergency bells. We're always prepared with hydrocortisone and Pyritin, which is something we give instantly to dumb down any reaction. If we're starting first cycle sort of paclitaxels, docetaxels, which are known to be have a high reaction rate, we are sort of really prepared already. And as soon as we pull that emergency bell, everyone runs, everyone drops everything. And I think that is a little bit scary in itself.
Yeah.
To have all them people come at you at one go. And I remember with you, Lauren, and you were sat next to this lady and there were just people everywhere. Yeah. And even the look on your face was like, oh God,
yeah,
what's
I was
going
terrified
on?
Because it was, I think it was my first doxetaxel. And when obviously you read up a little bit about your new drug, and the first thing I said was, it's got a higher reaction rate, the Taxol drug.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about different types of drugs later, because obviously different cancers have different chemos. But for breast cancer, that's quite a common drug.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I think both the women next to me actually were having it. And I was like, oh my God. But
just waiting.
Kate, you were amazing. The team were amazing. They kept me very calm, but also said, if it does happen, look how quickly it's fixed.
And they're fine now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you guys are amazing, and the ladies were fine, and they carried on their treatment.
Yeah, you keep going, and it's something that it doesn't happen all that often. You can have like a sort of couple of weeks and no one will react to anything, and then unluckily like some you'll have two people react in the same day for completely different things. And it's not so, like not just the Taxols, we give something called oxaloplatin.
I have that, Kate.
And you get the sort of the tingly in your throat.
Yeah,
and they say to avoid cold things.
I've had crash. I say crash team. It sounds.
Yeah,
I like a bit of drama.
I love a bit of drama.
I've had crash team. So I've had the button three times. So I have oxy, and it's oxy that causes it with me. And the spasms are they're scary, actually, to be honest with you. I lose my ability to speak. And they're really scary. But every time somebody is there pumping hydrocortisone into me within the space of like 30 seconds, it's literally like...
I never had a red button, so I had my treatment, Kate, in a regional hospital, a much smaller hospital. I didn't have a red button. Did you have it next to your...
It's never you, really.
We don't press it.
It's the nurse that's monitoring you.
I never saw it. You know, I've had... How many was it? It was 18 chemo treatments. Ooh. 18 times I sat in the chemo chair, and I never saw anybody, as far as I was aware... I mean, I did have the odd nap here and there. I never saw anybody have a reaction. So it's one of those things, I guess, it just... You know, sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. We were kind of saying about how we were all a bit scared before our first chemos, but then you kind of relax into it. And I'm fairly dull when I go for chemo. I'll have a bit of a nap. I might read a magazine. I might watch a bit of a bit of TV. You girls, you said you were singing, Lolly.
Oh yeah, well that was a lorazepam. I got quite hyperactive after a while. I'm very chatty, aren't I, Kate? Kate knows how chatty I am. But yeah, for me, I came mob-handed. It was always my sister and my dad, at least. And it just became our little routine. We'd get in the chair, I'd have the cold cap fitted and the drugs. And once the drugs were in, after the first 5 minutes, you kind of relax, go, right, I'm all right here. I've not reacted. Yeah. And then it would be magazines or social media. I'd be scrolling or Facebooking and all that jazz and eating. I was always cups of tea and tuna sandwiches.
Yeah, if they bring the lunch
trolley round.
Deb, I always think that your Insta stories always way more glamorous. You've drunk chemo. Champagne on chemo. That's chemo brain. We'll come on to that.
Yeah, but Kate, well, Jenna tells me off for this. You're not allowed to drink alcohol whilst you're having chemo, guys. Don't do it. I did
not
do it.
Not advised.
It was Christmas. Basically, there was a choice between lorazepam, which calms you down, or a glass of champagne, which calms you down. Mm-hmm. So I took the champagne. Yeah.
There we go.
It was great.
Christmas time.
I have possibly a different experience, but we can go into it in terms of I do have a reaction to chemo. The thing that shocked me is I think the first time I did react, I had the crash team, and I was kind of like, okay, so we just try something else, and it's like, no, we just pump you full of Peritone and we carry on.
Take a break and carry on.
Take it. Because there isn't the any alternative.
You've got to have it, haven't
you've
you?
You've got to have it. And it's just how we get it in you. And I think that's what took me by surprise more. Yeah.
Kate, you work at the Marsden. So, it's, you know, it's a busy London hospital. You get people like Deborah turning up, and you once rocked up in a cat suit as well, didn't you? What are some of the weirdest things that you've had people doing while they're sat there having their chemo?
So we have loads of different things. I think one of the funny, well, Lauren, for an example, singing. You give a little lorazepam, and she used to go climb the walls. It was great. But it was always sort of nice to do Lauren's treatment because
what would she be singing,
funny.
Kate?
Oh, God.
Probably some Drake.
Stuff that I couldn't even tell you. But you do have people come in, and we've got some lovely ladies that come in every week, and they'll be wearing a different wig every week. And you'll think, okay, I really recognise that face, but who is that woman? And it's just she's got purple hair this week rather than red hair. But I think it is such, because it's such a big unit and it's so busy, you do get to know people's quirks, and what you think at the start of their treatment is, oh, that's really odd, is actually just the way they're reacting to what's going on, and a little bit of chemo brain being really forgetful, forgetting that they've left their dog in the car, we had a little dog come into the day unit a couple of in a handbag.
I'd love to take my dog to chemo with me.
It's not allowed. I'm sure they snuck that in.
Yeah,
you must have been like, I'm really sorry, but the dog's gotta go.
It's like the alcohol sneaking the alcohol.
Yeah. If nobody sees it, it's okay. Let's talk about one of the other big things. We mentioned hair loss earlier on, which everybody asks about. Well, most people would ask about when they're told they have to have chemo. The other big thing that everybody thinks is that you're going to be really, really sick. Yeah. Now, I wasn't sick.
I wasn't sick. I towards the end of my chemo regime, I say the end, my current chemo regime, it is an occlumative effect. And I think that's something, I think with most drugs, Kate, please correct me if I'm wrong, I think with most drugs, my understanding of chemo is the side effects get worse the more and more you have of it. So actually, I felt surprisingly well to the point that I was still running. I was still going to the gym. I was still pretty much living a regular life. I would say, you know, my first lot of cycles, I was having a couple of rubbish days, would get through it.
Yeah, that would be the
carried
same
on again.
Yeah, I'd have days. So a cycle, you sort of count it in days, are generally 21 days. There are different drugs.
Yeah, depending on
the drug. So I would be all right, because when, and we'll come on to this in a second, when you have the chemo administered, you get lots of drugs to sort of pick you up, steroids and the
light
to keep you going for a few days. So I would find days 4 and 5, I'd feel like I had a terrible hangover.
Yeah.
And after that, things would kind of pick up again until the next cycle. But is that something, I was told by one of my nurses, Kate, that no one should really be sick from chemotherapy anymore, because there are tablets and drugs that you should be able to take to stop you being sick.
There is a lot of really good drugs out there at the minute. And I think the important thing is that when pharmacies sort of come round and give you drugs to take home with you, a lot of people, when they initially feel quite well, to think, oh, I'm not going to bother take them, I don't feel sick, and that's when it sort of builds up and it does become accumulative.
The drugs when you're told.
To take them, you might not want to take them, and that's entirely up to you, but you do find that in the over a period of time, you might have been fine on your first cycle, not feel sick at all, by about sort of cycle 3 cycle 4, you are accumulating more of the chemotherapy. So you, even if you don't feel sick, we always advise to take the tablet, so you are just nipping it in the bud before it becomes an issue.
Yeah, I used to set alarms on my phone. I had alarms on my phone for all my different drugs, so that I wouldn't be. I hate being sick. Like, it makes me cry. I'm such a baby when it comes to actually
really
physically
phobic,
being sick.
Yeah.
I hate it. I just hate that. I think it's because, like, you're not able to breathe properly and all that jazz. But I did. I was militant. I took my anti-sickness with alarms. So that's a good tip. I would say anyone about to go through chemo, because you do get a bit dopey and a bit sleepy and stuff like that.
Yep.
Set alarms in your phone for the recommended, like, hourly breaks in your tablets, and take them that way. And then you're kind of preempting it and you're getting ahead of any symptoms.
Yeah. It's all about routine as well. As soon as you, it's such a like a shock that you're going to have chemotherapy. But a good routine, like Lauren said, setting alarms for your tablets, getting into a routine of knowing your cycles, it becomes so much more easier because you sort of know what to expect rather than having every cycle a different sort of unknown side effect.
I used to as well. I don't know if you girls did this. I kept a side effects diary. So I just had a notebook and I would write down every day of each cycle what I was feeling that day. And then sort of the next, you know, the next cycle or another one on, I could kind of flick back and be like, oh, right, okay, this is the day when the hair starts falling out. This is where I get the indigestion.
Yeah.
And would just make me feel like, oh, it's,
I could start to predict my cycles to the point where I knew that I couldn't do anything for like a certain weekend because I would be flawed. I would say for me, I did 21 cycles in a row of kind of the Fole Foxes. So if, the Fole Foxes.
It's quite sexy.
The Fole Fury style. Yeah. I was thinking up to about cycle 16. So I've essentially had a year on chemo without a break. And I would say up to cycle 16, which is kind of 9 months worth roughly, I was like, I can do this. And, you know, everyone was like, I can't believe, you know, you've got to this. This is amazing. And then I have to say, you know, the last kind of six cycles for me, I was surprised by how flawed I actually got. You know, I'm fit, young, healthy. I've got
apart from the stage four cancer.
We'll just ignore this. But I thought, you know what, I can handle this. And I was surprised at how much, you know, in cycle 19, 20, 21, how many days I spent horizontal. You know, even now, my tiredness is even now.
I think that's the key thing with chemo. I mean, when I first got diagnosed and I outreached to the community online and I was like, oh my God, people like Alice May Perkins and stuff who reached out to me straight away, everyone's advice, and I will stand by their advice, you have to take every single day, every single moment as it comes, because you cannot worry about what the next day is going to bring, because it's so different and it's so different for everyone. Not everyone has the same reaction.
That's something to say, isn't it, Kate, that, you know, when I'd sat down with my chemo nurses and you get handed a booklet of side effects that you could have, is that you're not going to, well, if you may get all of them, you'd be very unlucky if you got all of them, but just everybody reacts differently and you may get some of those side effects and you may not.
Some people can breeze through it, and I do think what I've always said is that the more positive you are, even if it's the most stressful point, it is the most stressful point of your life, it's a massive change, the more positive you are, the more you put your head down and think, I'm going to get through this, and I'm going to not make the most of it, but do things like you ladies are doing, stuff like this, it does drive you more. And I think the minute sort of negativity gets in your brain, it does put you on a more of a downward spiral, because then everything just piles on top of you and you just end up becoming quite more upset and worrying about little things. So I do think being positive is the key to any sort of cancer diagnosis.
I totally agree with that, Kate, because I went through a phase where, because of the reactions I was having to oxy, I got incredibly scared of chemo, but to the point that I would go into the chemo ward, and Jenna, one of the lovely nurses again at the Marsden, would have to sit me down and say, you can do this. And I would say, I can't do this. And I would say, I'm not having chemo today. And pretty much throw my toys at the pram, but then go, oh, no, I need my toys back in the pram because I want to live.
Yeah.
Okay, but I don't want to do chemo. And it's kind of, but you really, I mean, I had a mental block, to be perfectly honest with you, and it's really hard, like when you're then dreading it, and then the day, then I would have like 3 days lead up where I'd be like, I can't do chemo, and then I'd stress
got to go in, and I would invariably end up on the chemo ward for hours. So normally, Kate, would an ordinary chemo kind of take an hour or so? You'd be on the ward probably an hour and a half if you're not having the cold cap.
It's very variable. So some people come in and they have sort of half an hour treatments and they're in and out. Other people, sort of the Fole Foxes,
six hours.
Some people are with us all day long. So there's the splatting treatments, you need sort of pre-fluids, post-hydration fluids, and that takes time. It's a long time. A lot of other people as well, sort of the new targeted therapies, the new immunotherapies, we're not sure how the body's going to react to them. So a patient might come in and have just a quick half an hour infusion, but they may be with us for 6 hours after, following observation period, just sat in the chair really, just to make sure they're okay. So it does vary. There's some people that just fly in and out and they're done. Does
that was never me.
It does depend a lot on access as well, like you were talking about earlier. Sort of cannulating, it takes a little bit of time to find a vein. If your veins are getting a little bit more sore, you're scared of having the cannula, which a lot of people are. It takes more time just to reassure people. With picks and ports, they're a lot quicker because you're just accessing them. You can take blood quickly. So that makes a huge impact on your day as well, how long it takes to access you.
The thing that always shocked me is you assume that when you have chemo, you just have the drugs that is chemo. But actually, you don't. Before you even get to chemo, you've had pre-meds.
Yeah,
and terrible. So you're presented with this like plethora of like,
yeah,
you know,
it's a tray full of goodies.
And you kind of, it surprised me. And then you take home the tray full of goodies as well.
Yeah.
And nobody ever tells you that actually with your chemo comes like this barrage of other kind of side effects.
Have their own side effects,
yeah.
Like
and they, and yeah.
Stuff,
yeah. Well, steroids.
Do anyone else have the prickly bottom steroids?
Oh yeah,
it's no, I don't get that. I'm jealous.
I don't
get this.
This is so the weirdest thing. What steroids are these, Kate?
So they're dexamethasone.
Yeah.
So they're
and it's given intravenously, isn't it? Before you have your chemotherapy, so it goes straight into your vein.
Yeah. So we give it straight into the vein prior to chemotherapy. So sort of with your paclitaxel, docetaxel. We give it. It does work as a very good antiemetic, so an anti-sickness. But it also sort of dumbs down any reaction you may have to the treatment you're about to have. But a lot of people do say that they feel like they've got ants in their pants or they've fallen in a nettle bush.
Things. You don't really feel it anywhere else, do you? But it's just your bottom.
Yeah, exactly. And for some people it's as well, like even the saline flush that they put into like your
pores. I can taste it.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I don't get the ants thing. Do you think it's because my bowel's been removed?
Maybe, I don't know.
The problem is with me is nobody tells you that steroids makes you can't sleep. So the problem is that it depends how sensitive you are. And Kate will probably agree with this, is that it would probably, you know, different dosages for different people. But for me, it really hit me hard to the point that every single cycle, I dance at 3 a.m. or I pace up and down
my living room. We have videos of bowel babe boogieing at 3 a.m. in the morning.
We have videos.
I mean, this is the joy of social media, is at 3 a.m. you can get onto Instagram or Facebook and be like, hey, is anybody else awake?
I do Saturday Night Fever, and then the funny thing is that I'm doing Saturday Night Fever, posting it at 3 a.m. and I'm getting like 50 responses going, me too.
And it's important to say as well, Kate, isn't it, that so you get all these drugs to take home and the steroids and these various side effects, is that, you know, you should always go in and see the doctor or speak to you, the nurses, because there are lots of other drugs that you can take. Just keep piling on drugs. So, you know, for example, when I was given the steroids and had trouble sleeping, they said, go to your GP and get some sleeping tablets. And, you know, it's not an ideal thing to be, you know, getting to sleep with sleeping tablets. But if that's what you need to kind of get you through.
You have to do what you need to do, don't you?
Yeah.
Don't be a martyr. Take the drugs.
And the thing is as well, like you said, you don't know how you're going to react. So you have to wait for the first couple of chemos to then go to your doctor and go, right, this is happening. Like, and I think as well, people see the automatic things. They think you're going to be sick and they think you're going to lose your hair. But actually, with chemo, it's all the little tiny bits that build up over time that actually the bit that makes you go, for God's sake. Like, for me, it was my tract. So, like, it would start with mouth ulcers, then I'd get indigestion, terrible heartburn, and I'd get really bad constipation. And it was those things combined that made me go, ooh.
Yeah, it's those little things, isn't it? It's the straw that broke. I had a really bad skin reaction to the EC that I had. And my skin just came out in these little bumps.
Red spots.
Yeah, all over it. And I was so conscious. You know, everything else you can cover, but your face, you can't cover your face. And I was really, really conscious of it. And as soon as I stopped the EC, then it,
I had it with the antibody drugs on the Herceptin and the Perjeta that I had alongside docetaxel on my second round of drugs. I had really bad flares up of rashes every time. But then again, first time it happened, I got given an antibiotic cream. So as soon as it started to flare up every cycle, then I just applied it and it kept it at bay.
Yeah.
But it's all those little things that people don't tell you. Like nose hair, we discussed this earlier.
We discussed nose hair.
So
you lose your nose hair.
You lose a lot. You do shed hair with most chemos.
It's
you don't necessarily lose it all.
Head.
It's all your hair. So it's good. In some areas, guys, saves a lot of waxing money.
I was talking about my beard. I was saying it was really good because I've stopped. No, I was saying whilst I was on chemo, it was great. I didn't have a problem. off of chemo, and suddenly, like, I could get a place on like the Greatest Showman as lady.
By the way, you can't even see anything.
You cannot.
The other day, you could until
you got rid. Yeah, the nose hair thing. Like, a lot of people don't realise that your nose hair falls out. And like, I don't know about you guys, but I'd get up out of bed sometimes, cross the room, and snot would hit the floor, and I'd be like, "How? What has just happened? There was not even any warning."
It's the first time that you learn, like, you know, nose hair actually has a purpose.
It does.
It's to keep stuff in your nose.
It does. And I used to sneeze, and I would like wee a little bit when I coughed and sneezed during chemo. I don't know why.
A little bit. I have a flood.
Oh, mate.
That's kids and chemo.
I'm blaming the muscles. I think the muscles like get affected, don't they?
Kate, for me, one of the scariest things actually was that I had some reactions, and I'm sure you appreciate it. Oxy does this, not whilst I was having the infusion, but almost immediately, in the days immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think that's a key thing, is people assume, like, you've had your chemo, done, dusted, I might feel a bit sick afterwards. But actually, I had one of the scariest things, which is where your throat goes into spasm and I couldn't breathe.
Oh, that's not good.
And it actually happened 2 days after my
chemo.
That's scary, mate. And it was incredibly scary. I don't want to scare anyone from, you know, the stories I'm telling. I'm just being really realistic. I got through it. It was absolutely fine.
Yeah, you're here today.
I'm here today. It's not a problem. But I think it's just being aware that it's not always in the chair, isn't it, Kate?
Yeah, it's not always in the chair. It is an ongoing sort of thing, especially with sort of oxaliplatins. You're very sensitive to the cold. So opening the fridge door, or just being in the cold, or washing your hands with cold water, that sort of triggers the drug and how it affects your body. And you don't necessarily think, oh, I'm 2 days after now, I should be fine, but it is still in your system. It needs to be in your system, so it is sort of being knowledgeable. And I think at the minute, sort of with us nurses, we need to educate patients and give a lot more information and make sure people understand what the side effects could be and what they might have to adapt their lives slightly a couple of days after treatment.
So I had to adapt to drinking only red wine after.
Oh, the trials and tribulations.
Oh, the trials and tribulations. Because I basically had some white wine and my throat spasmed. But almost with some of the reactions, some of them you have to laugh at them. I mean, they're hideous, but you have to laugh at the fact. So Oxy, my drug, which is exactly what Kate was talking about, I go into the fridge and you get immediate tingles in all your fingertips. But to the point that you go into the fridge with an oven glove on.
Wow.
Because it's that bad.
Did all the cold weather affect you?
The cold weather, it's hideous. Oh. I mean, I had very bad hand cramps as well and hand spasms, but to the point that my hands were just like a frozen kind of, they were just moving on their own accord. And it's quite scary because you realise how toxic these drugs are.
That's what it is, isn't it? It's knowing what, like, it's you going, oh my God, actually, like, this is really breaking certain things down in my body. And it's weird because it's a very unique experience. Like, there's nothing, when people go, what does it feel like? It's like a really bad hangover, but also the biggest thing, and I know we're all going to agree, is the chemo brain. For me. So, guys, for those of you who don't know what chemo brain is, it affects your cognitive functions. Obviously, all the bad cells have been broken down in your body. They've been attacked, your fast dividing cells. But it means it's attacking your good fast dividing cells too, and cells all over your body. And because your body is fighting this drug in your body and working with it, it takes away from your brain and it makes you very, very tired. And it actually causes you, like I felt, you feel dopey, you lose words.
Yeah, you mix your words up like I did earlier on.
Yeah, you can't get sentences out. I forget what I'm saying halfway through.
it's tricky that when you're a newsreader as well. When your job depends on getting the words right.
Me, Lauren and I just got off the train from London. And we know that the taxi rank in Manchester is downstairs. We both got off the train and followed, I followed Lauren like brainlessly, basically up the stairs to
Carluccio's. Like, this isn't the taxi rank, guys.
And we kind of looked at each other and we were like, chemo brain.
This is a real thing, isn't it, Kate? Because, you know, people talk about pregnancy brain, and I think that was disproved. I read something in the paper, but chemo brain it's a real side effect of chemotherapy.
Yeah, there's a lot of research out there about sort of chemo brain, and it does, like Lauren said, it does affect your sort of cognitive function. It's not sort of a long-term side effect, but It does give elements of forgetting your words, not remembering things, just having complete brain freezes. But there is a lot of research out there, not scary research, but research that shows that it does affect the sort of cognitive function.
Yeah, there's a piece of research actually that says, so it's really interesting. Apparently they did some research on a pair of twins, and one had had chemotherapy and one hadn't. They put them in an MRI scanner and they monitored their brain activity, and they both got asked exactly the same questions. Now the chemo patient was able to answer exactly the same, but their brain activity was that much higher because you're having to work that much harder to get the information coming out. And I think that's what it is. And when people, like, I feel like I'm almost a year out of chemo, which is crazy. That's gone mad fast. But I'm almost a year out of chemo, and I do still struggle slightly if I've overexerted myself, if I'm tired, my brain isn't the same. I can't fire on all cylinders.
Yeah, it just
like
starts to shut down a bit, doesn't it?
But that's because my brain's having to work so much harder to get stuff out. And I know brain training and certain things will really help that. But it is, for those of you who are going through chemo and you're like, oh my God, when's this going to happen? You're not alone. I think we all feel the same.
Yeah.
It does take a while to come back. And it does. I'm nowhere near as bad as I was during chemo. But it is a process, and you have to be a bit kind and just know your body's your brain's working harder to get there. And
also,
that's why.
You can blame everything on chemo brain.
Yeah, it's great.
we forget to meet people like, sorry, chemo brain.
Yeah, I forgot your birthday. Sorry, chemo brain.
Yeah, we can't let you go, Kate, without talking about the biggie, about the hair.
Yeah,
and the cold capping. We've kind of briefly explained cold capping in an earlier podcast, but just tell us about how it all works and how an important thing that is to a lot of chemotherapy patients.
So I think it's quite important to just say before that not all chemotherapies you will lose your hair. So I think that's one of the main sort of issues when anyone says to you you're going to have chemotherapy is instantly you think, oh God, I'm going to lose my hair. But it is important to say that not all chemotherapies you will lose your hair. It is unfortunately sort of more with the breast and breast treatment we give, there is a high likelihood that you will lose your hair. So we offer scalp cooling, which is basically a little box with a little hat attached to it. And it's really cold. And what it does is, because your hair is fast dividing cell, it cools down your scalp. So it sort of, when the chemotherapy reaches it, it sort of turns it away and tries to keep them follicles rather than them to fall out instantly. So like your eyelashes, your eyebrows might fall out. But with the cool cap, it's normally you sit on it for about half an hour before your treatment. I think Lauren will agree the first 15 minutes is probably the worst.
Mine was like the first 3 to 5. And then I kind of acclimatised. But it is like, guys, it's ultimate brain freeze.
Yeah.
And if you can handle that, you're fine. Well, you just got to get past that little initial bit.
I never had that. And I just said, when's it going to get cold then? And they're like, that's as cold as it's going to be. And I was like, this is okay.
Right.
I can totally deal with this because I was expecting it to be awful. So, and I think some people, but then I sat next to another lady on the chemo ward who had her head in her hands. She was kind of rocking back and forth at the start. And it's the same as the reaction.
So there's a video that we can share that I juggle, I do spinning plates.
Quite about distraction, isn't it?
Yeah, it's total distraction. I wasn't allowed to use the cold cap for all my treatment because some drugs,
like the oxy
will react to it. But when I was off the oxy and just using a drug that I thought would lose my hair, I thought I might lose my hair, but actually it's not proven. And I was like, I'll use it anyway.
Yeah, well, that's what I did.
I was just like, I just want to try, not for fun. I mean, it's not something you want to try for fun. Although, don't be surprised if anyone that you might have with chemo with you
wants to try it.
So I've got a picture of my husband who's like, oh, I can handle this, puts it on, and you actually see, you guys will know, when you take it off, there is actually ice on top of your head.
Frost on your
head. Everyone else thinks they can handle it. And they probably can, but you're like, go on then, give it a go.
I've got a great picture actually that I took of my head after I'd taken the cold cap off with the ice and the frost. So we'll try and put that on the podcast website.
Yeah. I don't think I ever saw the frost on my hair actually, because I just put my little bobble out straight on.
I think it also depends on how much water you put on the hair before you put on the cold cap. You have to dampen your hair down and stick a bit of conditioner on so it comes off easily. So I think if you stick a load of water on,
Kate was always very good with me when Kate did my hair. Make sure it was all well
obviously
done.
Got the knack.
Yeah.
And also at the end, to stop that sort of ice cube is to warm you up for like 5 minutes and to just turn the machine off and leave the hat on. So it's sort of, you're not taking the hat off when it's still freezing cold. It's just being prepared, like if hot water bottles, blankets, buying a little hairband.
I used to take an electric blanket. Yeah, it's just let me use on my ward.
Being prepared.
Yeah, and how much of a difference does it make to people? You know, how much success do you see? Obviously, you know, I am the poster girl for cold capping.
It worked. So
yeah, it worked. Well, for me, I kept the fringe and I kept the sides and the back of my hair, but I lost basically the whole of the top. I had a Friar Tuck going on. But for me, that was enough for me to not have to brave the shave or to give up, because it meant when I wore a headscarf, it looked like I had hair and I felt like me in the mirror.
Yeah.
So it's a mix, isn't it, Kate? Some people keep a lot, some people keep some.
And it is, you're putting a lot of trust into a box, basically, which is, I think, daunting in itself, because it's out of everyone's hands. If you keep your hair, you're putting a lot of trust in the little machine. It's very much, though, trial and error, seeing how well the caps fit. If you don't feel right, if it's not touching all of your head, saying, actually, I prefer to have another cap, having like a larger cap and a larger hat, but then a smaller sort of the jockey hat thing.
What do they call it? The skull cap that goes to the top. I was so fussy. Is this a common thing? Because I always felt like I was like such a fussy madam that I would sit and I was so concerned about fit that, you know, there'd be times I would take the cap off like two or three times. Like, no, it's not on right. It's not touching right there. Yeah. Do people quite often get anxious in that way?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most... people are more anxious about the cold cap and if it's going to work and how much hair they may or may not lose than actually the treatment. And I think sort of when you're coming in and it's your first cycle, and it is daunting, don't get me wrong, but it's a lot of things that you have to prepare for. You didn't realise you're going to have all them pre-medications. You didn't realise you were going home with tablets. You didn't realise you'd have to sit under a very cold hat for maybe 2 hours.
Mm. I was going to say, I think it's really important to say that actually the cold cap is a choice, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, all three of us chose to do that because, I think for us personally, that felt right. But I've met loads of people who just go, screw this. Yeah. It's only hair. I'll shave it off and it's going to come back. And fair play. That wasn't me. But I think hats off to those people that take that route as well. I think it's worth, you know, going down the thing that's right for you.
But how many people do you find? What's the kind of percentage of people who are desperate to cold cap like we were, and then other people who are just like, I just don't care?
I think it's I think it's more sort of like 60-40. A lot of people really, really want the cold cap. And even so, we go by a policy and there's only 4 drugs we're meant to give the cold cap with. And a lot of people do have it off policy. And there's a lot of people the doctor has promised them. I've had a few patients that have been promised scalp cooling with oxaliplatin, and that's just not going to happen. But I think it is a more common thing. And a lot of men do it now as well. Yeah. We've got quite a few patients that are male and having the cold cap just because that they don't want to lose their hair. They don't want to be seen as a cancer patient, which I think is quite common for a lot of people with the whole chemotherapy and losing their hair. Is that when you look at someone, then they haven't got any hair, then they become they take on this role of a cancer patient. And I think a lot of people don't want that. So I think at the minute we've got a lot of patients that are really successful with the cool cap and have sat. There's some ladies that sit there for the 3 hours of their paclitaxel and then another hour after on the end, and they stick with it and they say, actually, it's fine after once your head's absolutely frozen.
I think it depends how you feel as well, because I think if it was that painful for me and I really couldn't handle it, I wouldn't have kept going.
Yeah.
But because I could handle it, I carried on. So
that was like me, it was fine. And probably that's why I found it fine, because I was determined to find it fine. And I said it would have had to have been just the most awful, awful, you know, indescribable pain for me to have not done it. And so much so that the last lot of chemotherapy I had, you know, was one of those non-prescribed ones that you talked about, Kate. I had, I can't even remember the name of them now. I had gemcitabine and carboplatin. And carboplatin is not really a hair loss drug.
Yeah.
But when I first had that on its own, and the nurse said, I'm a bit confused, why are you having the cold cap for this? Because you're not going to lose your hair. And I said, well, you know, it said there may be some thinning. Yeah. And if I can stop that 5% of thinning by using this cold cap, then I will do it. You know, I will sit here for 7 hours. Because I've lost enough hair. You know, I lost 20% with the first lot of chemo, and I was not prepared to lose any more. So I was just, you know.
I used it for a drug that it wasn't recommended for. Not Oxy, but a different drug, just because I wanted to feel a bit better.
If I saved a couple of hairs, it was worth it. Stick me in the corner with my cold cap on and my electric blanket and leave me to it.
Okay, finally, I'm just wondering about you guys. Like, it'd be great to hear Kate's input on this as well, because I don't know about you, but another massive fear is
the germs
and going neutropenic. Yeah. Because, so for the listeners, neutropenia is when your white blood count drops to a dangerously low level, so you cannot fight off infection.
Just your immune system.
Your immune system. And it's a very common side effect of
of chemo.
So some people might experience it on chemo one. Some people have it every chemo. Some people never have it. I had it on chemo seven. Yeah. And I think people are terrified. I was terrified of going neutropenic till I went neutropenic. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's
some
all
people
right.
are terrified of go. I actually thought before I embarked on chemo that I would be locking myself away. I mean, yeah. I'm quite a sociable person. So I don't know why I thought this. But,
yeah,
I was,
but it's the perception we're given,
it's the perception that we're given that you have to lock yourself away. Mm. You can't live a regular life. Don't touch public transport. Don't do X, Y, Z. My understanding, Kate, is actually, you know, there are some key days that you have to be aware of. I actually inject myself with drugs to boost my immune system after the chemo.
GCSF injections, right?
Filgrastim.
Yeah, and it's prescribed for certain regimes. You know, what's your take on this, Kate? You know, should we be locking ourselves away? I hope not.
No, I think, like the whole going back to positivity as well, you need to get out. You need to be in the fresh air. If you're having a really bad day, you need to just get out and see people. And sort of around day seven of your cycle, we work in sort of days, and around day 7 to 10 is when you're most likely to become neutropenic. And that's when you just need to have a bit of common sense about you. Don't go on packed tubes. Don't be around people that have coughs and colds, but it's only a small period. It's not sort of as soon as you have your chemotherapy, you need to be locked away, because that's just going to put you in a downward spiral. You need to be out and about and different things. It's just, I think, a lot of common sense and just knowing if someone's got a really bad cold next to you, like, actually, I probably
run away.
Should sit. And
this is something that other people don't realise as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I've always, you know, I've worked throughout all of my chemotherapy. And so I'll always come into work with my antibacterial wipes and be wiping down the desk. I had my own set of headphones. But this is something that people don't understand. And there was actually, there was a story appeared in the press about me having to wipe down desks. You know, ordinary people do this as poor cancer patient, wiping down the desk. And a radio presenter, who shall remain nameless, picked this up and read that I had my own set of headphones. I was like, I know she's got cancer, but what does she need her own set of headphones for? Who does she think she is? And it's just like, if you think about the germs on the headphones, and I'm just trying, and I'd had a really bad ear infection, so I was just trying to, you know, keep the germs away from the ear, and people just don't get how bad it is.
How bad it can be.
Their illness that, you know, will lay you low for a couple of days.
It could kill you.
I got a really bad cold, but like just before Christmas, not last year, before, when I was in chemo. My Lord, I literally felt like I was dying. I could feel the germs in my body. And I was like, what is going on? I've never felt so ill. And that was the illest I felt. And I was a neutropenic then. I was just ill because someone had babies.
Yeah, it's because normally,
so many
normally
germs.
I'm
a
like the,
baby and I got a cold.
No, yeah. I'm the casual person that's like, oh, don't worry about them, bring them around.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, no, stay away. Like, I'm literally like, and my friends and family, you know, they know that now, because actually I've been pretty adamant with it. I'm like, look, I'm really sorry. I love you to bits, but, you know, you might have a cold. I'm going to get pneumonia.
Yeah.
Exactly what you said.
And, you know, nightmare of nightmares for me. I've got a toddler. I've got a 2-year-old. So while I'm on chemo, he's, you know, constantly running from like snotty nose to snotty nose. And I can't not kiss him or cuddle him.
No.
So while I was sort of struggling with low blood, so I was kissing a snotty child and just keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah. I think mums must build up an immunity to it though, because I'm not a mum. So when my friend's kids did come over, I was like, is the nose running? If it's not, they can come on in. But I think you must build up some kind of immunity with a low immune system. But
have
all of
fine.
Us been neutropenic?
Oh yeah.
No, I haven't actually.
Have you not?
No, I haven't.
Well done, Deb.
The one who's had the most chemo has never been neutropenic.
It's the red wine.
It's the chocolate. Red wine. No, I haven't. They thought I was. I've had infections, lots of infections. But when it came to my bloods, I was borderline once in cycle. But this is the thing, it doesn't, your bloods don't always reflect how you feel.
Yeah, it's very true.
Can I just say, my understanding, and Kate, correct me if I'm wrong here, and I'm not a doctor, the reason you become neutropenic is when you have chemotherapy, it basically kills the cells in your body.
Yeah.
And the idea is that it kills the bad cells,
but
it also, unfortunately, kills the good cells. And neutropenia is just one of those things. So things like thrush, for example, can also happen because they're the good cells, and it can change the bacteria in your gut. And it's essentially, it doesn't distinguish between good and bad. So it just, it's like Dettol. It just wipes out everything.
Yeah.
And you hope it gets the cancer.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that's kind of why you become neutropenic.
So it completely knocks your immune system.
Is that right?
Yeah, so your immune system takes a big knock, and that's what is fighting your infections. So cytotoxic drugs can't differentiate between good and bad cells, so they just kill everything. So it's if you think of like a garden and it's sort of like a weed killer, she'll kill in all the garden, basically, and you hope that in between there was flowers and weeds, and you're hoping you're killing the weeds, but also you've killed all the flowers. And it does take your immune system does take a knock, and that's what's fighting any infection. So it is just being careful, and it can be very serious, not to scare people, but it's keeping an eye on your temperature, making sure that then if you're really cold and you're shivering, it might be because you have an infection. And it's getting the right help as quickly as possible, sort of with ringing the hotline or ringing your local hospital to get the right treatment.
And it's not just white blood cells, because I wasn't neutropenic, but I, because of repeated infections, my red blood cells went down, so I became really anemic. So I actually ended up having a blood transfusion, but I didn't realise how common it is. Do you see that quite often, Kate?
Yeah, so we do give a lot of blood transfusions. It's a common sort of side effect of your blood work, and you might be feeling fine, but your red blood cells have dropped, and then you think, oh, actually I am a little bit short of breath, or I am a little bit more fatigued, and you just need a sort of another little boost or a transfusion to get you back onto a sort of level where you're fully functioning again. And sometimes it delays your treatment, you might have to miss a week, and I think that really puts people out as well, because they've got everything planned of I've got 6 weeks need blood or neutropenic.
My delay that don't I plan. Had from neutropenia was on my between my cycles 1 and 2, so it came as such a shock. I was sat there, my hair was wet, I had the conditioner on, ready to put the cold cap on, and out trotted the doctor, like, I'm really sorry, but your blood's on. And I was like, hang on, what's happened here? And so I planned in days to work and things to do, and it just knocked everything out by a week. I sobbed on the, that's the one time that I've sobbed on the chemo ward, was the first time when they were like, yeah, sorry, you can't have it. I was like, give me the chemo.
And it doesn't always feel like you think it will. Like, I was so terrified of going neutropenic, I thought it was going to be this big thing and I'd feel horrendous, and actually I knew something wasn't right, because I got sick. I threw up and I was like, hang on a minute. I have not thrown up at all. And then I had a really bad belly, like water. And that wasn't normal for me either. And I'd rang the hotline. The Marsden hotline is incredible. I'm sure most hospitals have them, because my nurses drummed it into me. And I think it's important that everyone knows this, who's going through chemo. If you are worried about anything, call up and check, because it's not worth the risk of going, oh, it's just the chemo, oh, it's just this, it's just that. You must just be so hyper aware of yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad I did, because when I went to the hospital the next morning, this was in the middle of the night, so the next morning they called me in and I went in, had bloods, and I thought, it's a tummy bug, they're going to give me antibiotics and I'm going to be out the door. Oh, no, no. Your normal white blood count should be 2.5. Mine was 0.18. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
You had no
immune system, I had nothing.
That's what it means.
Yeah, so basically, and it was from just being in tune with my cycles and knowing that that was a little bit out of whack for me, but I definitely didn't think it was neutropenia. I thought it was, I've got a bug. And it wasn't. I literally was neutropenic.
Your body's not got anything. Because the one time that my bloods were the worst was near enough my last chemo, and I went in, and my blood must have basically been water, because everything, my hemoglobin, my red bloods, my white bloods, my neutrophils, everything was just low, 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 low on the little printout.
It's depressing if you get like a line across that. And the reason we have to, Kate, I'm pretending to be really technical, like I know what I'm talking about.
Dr. Deborah,
it's my fourth career choice. My understanding is the reason we all have to take, you know, any cancer patient has to take, has to have their bloods regularly checked. And the reason, my understanding is, you can't basically pump psychotoxic drugs into a body that is just not going to be able to handle it. Mm. So our blood is regularly monitored.
Yeah. And I do think that's important as well. Not many people, when they first come into chemotherapy, the whole sort of journey of it, realise that they have to have routine bloods. Like, what do you mean I have to come back next week and have more bloods?
Yeah.
And we'll sometimes, if you're on clinical trials, for instance, we might take 10 or 12 bloods off you in one go. And I think that's not very well explained. And it's, again, patient education and information of that. We need to make it aware that you do need to come in for routine bloods, and you might need to see the doctor once a week just to make sure you're okay. You can't just have a load of paclitaxel, docetaxel, and we'll just send you off and hope for the best. It's sort of keeping a regular monitor on it and just be, like, again, just being in a routine. It's more routine rather than a plan, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Because because your routine, you sort of get into a schedule, whereas if you plan something and it goes haywire, then you're off track and then you lose a bit of hope and you worry. So it's more...
And it's frustrating, isn't it? Like, I'm sure you see it in patients all the time, but I've had so many scenarios. I'm a bit of a control freak and I like my diary planned. And suddenly, you know, you've planned all your social events on your good week and your good week becomes your bad week because your cycle has shifted. And you suddenly, you know, you're there as the doctor saying, I'm really sorry, but we're going to have to shift this by the week. And you're like, no, I've got a really good party. This isn't going to happen.
Mine was then, because I thought I was going to paclitaxel, so it would be every 2 weeks, not every three. So I was due, in my head, I had the day, beginning of March, that I was going to finish chemo, and that was where I was at.
A milestone that you're heading for.
And everyone's like, when are you finished? I'm like, 2nd of March. Da-da-da. And they told me I was going on to the doctor's taxel and it would be three weekly, and I was in bits because I just had, I was at, but it's only an extra 3 weeks, but your head
down and you're heading for that finish line. Yeah. If somebody moves it, it is just the
But
the
that
worst
is the thing with
it.
Chemo and cancer treatment in general. I think the thing is you just need to be so accepting and just being like, this is what it is, and you just got to go with the flow.
You literally have to go with the flow
because there's nothing you can do, and it's important, and you have to just listen to what you're being told, really.
But also, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, the team that I work with...
It is a full-time job, babe.
It's a full-time job. The team that I work with to try to keep me alive, they're also very accepting. So if I say, actually, you know what it is, the kids half term, and that week, you know, we actually really want to go away. Let's face it, we need to live as well.
Yeah.
So people are just human, and people, you know, on any team, don't be scared to ask. There is a treatment plan, and in an ideal world, you know, we would all have treatment every 2 weeks or whatever it might be. But don't be scared, you know, don't be scared to ask, right?
Yeah. Because it's your life, and we're putting a massive, it's like a huge thing for you. So we try to accommodate where possible to go around any sort of things you've booked. If you're going away on holiday, we're very accommodating as to try, and you're not rigid in this. It's not that if you don't have your treatment this week, it's all going to go upside down. You can be more flexible, and we try and be as flexible as possible to accommodate any of your worries or any of your delays. Or sometimes some weeks you might just think, I really don't want this treatment, and can I delay a week? And that's okay. It's not a rigid. It's a fluid sort of journey. It's a bit of a roller coaster, really. Up and down on both sides.
I think it's more of a roller coaster.
There's so much more that we could say on chemotherapy, so I think it's something that we're going to have to come back to because it's just such a massive, massive topic. But let's just get on to our top five, and we'll keep you with us for this, if that's okay, Kate. Our top five tips for chemotherapy. Number one, who wants to go first? Let's do one each.
My big cancer, like, chemo tip is when I was ill, everyone was like, oh my God, you must go on this like vegan turmeric, like take CBD oils diet. And I got really overwhelmed. And do you know what?
When you're angry, I want to punch people sometimes.
Because when you're in that position, your body's craving starch and calories because it's fighting and it needs it. So my advice is, if you decide to eat a Big Mac meal every single day for the whole of your first cycle, and that's what you need to do to make you feel better, to make sure you're getting your calories, do it. Put your head down and just do it, because everyone else is going to have an opinion, but they're not you. So just eat, as long as you're eating and getting stuff in your body, do that. And please don't feel guilty about it, because one time in your life, if you're going to live off chicken nuggets, it's going to be in chemo.
Absolutely. I would say do whatever you need to do to get through it. So I've done dancing during chemo, fancy dress during chemo, my mates during chemo, on my own during chemo, whatever it takes, do it.
Yeah. My advice would be, it passes. Just
or not. because this is the thing. So people ask me, people say, how long are you going to be on chemo for? And I'm like, probably forever. And they're like, really? When you're stage four, it's one of those things where you hope to have a break, and then maybe you hope the cancer doesn't come back, and then you might be on chemo again. So maybe not.
But maybe it's then
a little break.
But it passes and you get
more
a few
that
weeks off.
It is a cycle, isn't it? And it does pass. So you may be feeling really rubbish, but you will always come around.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Less.
Yes. Well rested. Positive.
Yes.
Thank
positive
you.
Positive thinking. Yes. PMT.
Number four. Let's have number four from you, Kate.
So I think it's really important to be in a routine. So getting your tablets on time, setting alarms, but really important to know that it might not all go to plan, and you might have some good days, you might have some bad days, and it's just being a routine and knowing that you need to be flexible.
And number five, I mean, you talked about this earlier on, Kate, just trying to get through it with some positivity.
Yeah, being positive is, I think, the main focus of everything. I think if you go in with a positive attitude, like, you're going to get through it. It's just a blip in the road. I'm always going on about bumps in the road, and mm-hmm. It is. Being neutropenic is a bump. Losing your hair is a bump. You'll get through it at the end, and it's just about being really positive and having a really good mental attitude towards it.
And even some of the worst side effects. Yeah. I lose my ability to speak. Yeah. I think we've got a video that we can share about that. You're pooing water, basically.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But it does get better, even those. You know, I might not ever get off chemo, but my pooing water,
I think,
might
it's the perception
better.
And the way you see things. And if you could go in and go, oh my God, I'm having chemo, or you can go in and go, oh my God, I'm having chemo to make me better. And I think that is what it is. You've got to get sick to get better, and it's that mindset. So if you can try, I know it's hard, and you can't do it all the time. You have to have down days.
Yeah. But, if you have a down day, have a cry.
But just be focused, I think, getting your head down. Bear Grylls, I call it. Bear Grylls, survival mode, head down, straight
just
through.
Get to the end.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kate, for joining
us.
Thank you, Kate. For all your top tips and advice.
Please,
today.
Can you do my Zoladex next week?
Yeah, I'll be in. Don't worry.
Excellent. Sorting out your diary for you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Remember, you can contact us on social media by using the hashtag #YouMeBigC to suggest future topics or things you'd like to hear us talk about. If you could leave a review of this podcast, that would be very kind of you. Spread the word.
Only a good one, though.
Oh yes. Yeah. Are we allowed to say that?
Five stars.
Thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week.
See you next week. Woo! Bye.
Thanks for downloading the You, Me and the Big C podcasts.
Don't forget to click subscribe.
Or get more great podcasts from 5Live at bbc.co.uk/podcasts.